With over 40% of marriages ending in divorce, couples are bound to feel hesitant about tying the knot. But what are the most common reasons for couples to split up, and can they be avoided? Find out what we think this week on Family Anatomy.
Hosts of Family Anatomy are psychologists, but they're not your psychologist.
So if you need to talk to someone about family or mental health issues, you could get a referral from your family doctor. This show is for information only.
Welcome to Family Anatomy, your source for parenting and relationship information, with your host, Dr. Giuseppe Spizzano.
And Dr. Brian McDonald. You can find us at familyanatomy.com or over on iTunes. And let's get right into our ominous topic of the day, anatomy of marriage killers.
Yeah, that's we got that title partly inspired from a newspaper article.
Well, you found this newspaper article from the Vancouver Sun about the things that people say are the worst destroyers of marriages.
That's right.
The most common causes for divorce.
That's right. This was kind of interesting because it was an article based not on any scientific research. This was more like a case study is what psychologists would call it. But what it really means is the reporter just went around and talked to people and got their feelings about why marriages end.
Some of the people were counselors. Some of the people were survivors of divorce, I guess, if you want to call it that. They looked at some, I think they talked to some professors too, and found out some information that they thought, oh, how shocking, of the top 10 reasons two that we know are major issues didn't even come up in their interviews.
That's right. And that was the big sort of interesting finding there.
Ooh.
Infidelity.
Yes.
And financial. You hear that all the time, that the money and, you know, and extramarital affairs are big on the list.
Well, I mean, the research shows, if you look at research on, you know, what are the factors that link to divorce, financial problems are definitely one of them. I saw a study from, you know, just a few months ago that said that financial problems are still tightly linked. And it's mostly not the financial problems, it's fights about the financial problems.
Right. Right. So, but again, this wasn't a scientific thing, and they went through the top 10 reasons, I guess.
Which is cool, because we're not about science in any way, shape, or form on Family Anatomy. We don't, science be damned.
And I mean, a lot of countries do this kind of research, I guess, but they do it a bit more scientifically. They poll people.
Mm-hmm. Most of what they did, like all of the quotes, not all of them, but many of the quotes in their article are from therapists and authors and so the information can still be helpful. It's just not necessarily a survey that can really tell you these are the actual top 10 reasons why a couple split up.
And really, the other thing is that when we start going through some of these things, they do resonate, I think. People, when they hear them, are going to go, well, yeah, I can see how that would be a problem. I don't. There's not too much on that list that you could say, I think I'll try one of those and take my chances.
Well, I have to say, though, I was quite shocked to find on the list that co-hosting a podcast is the number one thing that breaks up relationships.
Well, Noah, you're going to have those papers in the mail tomorrow. So,
okay, podcasting was not on the list.
I'm not too shocked myself.
I didn't know how common couple podcasting co-hosts were.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind just signing those.
Yeah, I'll get right on it. Yeah. Why do we need to be, we're married to different people.
That's
what
true.
Are you talking about?
Well, we're married to the show.
Well, it's our baby.
Yes.
We're not married to it.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know about you. I could take it or leave it.
I guess it's... Low commitment. That comes up on the list of some of these things, because we're going to talk about more than this one survey. But this survey, number one on their list was...
We should mention the authors. I mean, that's credit where credit is due. Vancouver Sun reporters Tara Carman and Douglas Todd.
Yes. And so the number one thing on their list is in-laws interference.
And you can understand why that would be a problem, because when people feel caught in the middle in any relationship, right, whether you're a child whose parents are splitting up, or you're a husband whose mother-in-law is kind of putting you in between, or in the middle between her and your wife, I mean, that's an issue.
You can see that being an issue, that, you know, you're having trouble with your spouse, and rather than work it out together, you go talk to your father, your mother, or somebody in your family, and they validate all the reasons that your spouse is terrible. And all it does is make things worse.
Part of the problem is that they remember those bad things, and they're not there for the reconciliation after everything has gone. You know, they don't hear about the good stuff. So they still, the next time something happens again, they remember the last time you came to them.
That's
and
right.
That so becomes
when,
a problem.
That's
yeah.
it. So when you hear, I had to go vent to my mother, right?
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's not about how awesome your spouse has been. I'm going to vent about how awesome they are.
Yeah.
It's more like I'm going to vent about all the things that drive me crazy about this person.
Well, you know, and I think lots of people don't realize this before they get married, but for many couples, when you marry someone, you're also marrying into that family, and being a part of that family can be a stressful circumstance if you're not prepared for it. I mean, I don't know what I thought about this going into when I was getting married. It's almost, you know, in 2 weeks, it's going to be 17 years. Congratulations to me. But I'll just pat myself on the back.
Yes, no, that's very good.
But I remember thinking going into it that, you know, my wife is very close to her parents and to her brother. And in fact, her brother was our roommate for a little while. And so, you know, I knew going in that I wasn't just marrying her.
Yeah. Well, for a while, I guess you're marrying her brother as well.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we're still very tight.
So, yes. You know, I think, this is a little bit of a stereotype too, that mother-in-laws in particular are a stereotype there, right?
Yeah.
That they interfere. But I think there's another side to that, and that's the problem sometimes with these lists, is that your extended family can be a much needed source of support.
Well, we know extended
family, especially
can
when
be
you have children. You know that they connect with your children. They can.
Well, haven't we talked about that again and again about the village and the fact that it's the fact that the extended family aren't so close that is creating some issues for parents and their kids.
So this is why the list can be a little like you can see how that can be a problem. Right?
It's interference.
You can also see how it could be helpful, though.
It's interference and conflict with extended family and in-laws that tends to be the problematic thing.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think it's important, and this is hard to do. Now, I'm trying to think. I haven't had to do this with my in-laws or with my parents, honestly, is to set boundaries around what's going to work for you and your spouse. You know, when you're in a relationship, you kind of have to take your wife's side over your parents' side. A lot of the time, because this is the person you're living with. This is the person who is going to be part of your life going forward, right? Unless you're on this list of 41% of people who are headed for divorce.
That's it. I mean, you have to put your spouse first. That's a rule of thumb.
Yeah.
Which you have to
it's a pretty good
sort of
rule.
Stick by.
Yep.
If you put your family of origin, your parents before your spouse,
it's potentially a source of conflict, right?
That's going to be some trouble.
That's what we're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the number two thing that they have there is pressure to marry someone, like from the community or from
cultural
society
standpoint,
in general,
or your parents,
or from,
right?
Yeah, or from family.
Yeah. So if you're in an arranged marriage, that's something that might contribute to divorce later on. I guess that still happens sometimes.
It depends on the country you're in. I think I saw something about 40 to 50%. Was it in India, I believe it was, that a lot of the marriages are still arranged?
Doesn't happen so much in Canada, though, I don't think.
Doesn't happen so much here. But it does happen in many places around the world still. And you know what was interesting about that is I looked it up a little bit, and you know the person you're going to marry from when you're pretty young, maybe 10, 11, 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And you have this long, long, long courtship. You don't necessarily get married that young, but you've known them like almost
since
your whole life.
Yeah.
And And so, you know, when you think about arranged marriages, because we're not as familiar with it here in the West, I guess, you think that, well, you know, someone just sort of puts you together, but really you've known them for a very long time usually, and there's a little bit of thought that goes into it.
Well, and they're not just talking about arranged marriages, right? Because this is number two on the list of marriage killers. It's got to be more common, you know, than just those marriages that are formally arranged.
Well, yeah, I think, well, here's the thing that's confusing us, I think, is that men don't have the same kind of pressure that women have. So
the pressure sometimes goes in the opposite direction for men.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So there, I think there is more pressure on women. I think it's declined over the years, but I think that's there.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, as the number two of the top 10 reasons why marriages end, okay, well, I guess I can understand that if you've married somebody who you're not compatible with, that, yeah, that would be a problem that might lead to divorce. But I just can't imagine that being number two of the top 10.
Yeah, that right? Sounds like it's kind of been pumped up there.
Yeah.
I know that there's some research that says that if you're younger, then you're more likely to get divorced if you marry when you're younger.
Mm-hmm.
And so that might go together with number two, in that if you have a lot of pressure, it means that you might get married younger.
Oh, you know what? And shotgun weddings and things like that are probably a situation that just occurred to me now.
Yeah.
As we're talking about it. But the next thing is lack of connection. And I think that maybe four or five of the following, the other things on the list fall under lack of connection, because we wouldn't even be talking about them if the couple were connected to one another.
I think you're right. You can start collapsing these things. And, you know, they've got child-centered family, I think is number five on the list. Number six is extramarital affairs.
Wandering eyes.
Yeah. So yeah. That's interesting, though. I'm just realizing now they're saying that that was one of the things that wasn't at the top, but it's still, you mean at number six, it's still.
Right. Still well, and were they even talking about, I mean, my reading of it, it wasn't just having an affair. It was seeing something that appears to be more appealing to you.
Right. So they didn't actually call it, they didn't call it extramarital affairs. But I guess the idea there, I think, is that you can have emotional affairs. Mm-hmm. They don't have to be physical affairs.
Exactly, yeah.
And so that's maybe what they're getting at.
I think that's probably the case. And okay, yeah, that's definitely a problem, but it's not going to be a problem if you're connected, right? And didn't Sue Johnson say that when we talked to her, that these affairs don't happen unless the couple is already growing apart? Those are a symptom, not the actual problem.
That's right. I mean, a lot of these you can see, and we can talk about that later too. It feels like a lot of the surveys that we're going to sort of touch on here, you can have so many different things on these lists, but when you really collapse them down, a lot of them have to do with whether you're going to turn towards your partner and make a concerted effort to understand them and connect to them, or whether you're going to turn away and start to build your own reasons why this is not going to work and you're not going to take any more risks with your partner to get close to them.
Well, and can you rely on one another when there's a problem? If you're stressed, is that the person that you go to, or are you heading home to mom and dad?
Or are you heading to someone else who has caught your eye?
Indeed. So there are a bunch of things that certainly fit under that category, but you mentioned child-centric families, and I thought that was interesting given that we so recently talked about attachment parenting and how moms get stressed out if they can't meet their child's every need under that attachment parenting approach.
And you know, this is something that I've felt for a long time. The parents are the pillars of the family, and if they're not taking care of one another, and their marriage starts to fall apart, the children fall down with them. So they have to make themselves an important priority, for not just for themselves, but for their kids.
Well, we know in order to be a good parent and to be there for your kids, you need to look after yourself to some extent too. I mean, yes, you have to be responsive to your child's needs. You also have to look after yourself. So, I mean, like you said, the parents' needs are important as well.
Yeah.
And the fact is, it occurred to me reading this, that some of these child-centric families that they're talking about are the ones who say, let's have a baby to save this relationship. And I can't think of a single time when something like that has worked. That's not a balm for your relationship. That's an added stressor when you bring a baby into it, and you feel resentful that the other person isn't there doing the duties that you expected them to, and it just winds up, I would say, more often than not, it winds up being a wedge instead of the Band-Aid that you wanted it to be.
Listen, if the reason that you're having a child is to avoid some of the conflict that you're having in your marriage or in your relationship, it's just like any distraction. You know, I've seen it myself where people are on the verge of buying a bigger home with a much bigger mortgage, and then that doesn't happen, and then there's a divorce. Or they're just about to have to get divorced, and they have another child.
Right.
Like there's this, I mean, there is this tension, like you desire for this thing to go better. So there, I wouldn't say that it's entirely distraction, but there's still, you know, most marriages start out with lots of hope.
Well, hopefully, right? Yeah. I mean,
you know what I mean?
You're so saying till death do us part, right?
That's it. So you start out with all this hope and usually a lot of love as well. Something goes wrong, right? So when it goes wrong, you want to recapture that hope. So it's not entirely distraction that's at play here.
Right.
You still have some of that sort of hope underlying all the tension and stress and difficulties that you're having.
It's a last-ditch effort, right? These distracting sorts of things. It's like, oh, nothing else has worked. I mean, we have to find a way to hold on to this. But usually those solutions wind up adding to the stress load and not reducing it. And then there winds up being more conflict instead of less.
That's it.
And I think in other kinds of those child-centric families where everything's focused on the child, right? And you're spending all your time chauffeuring the child around and making sure that they don't cry so they don't get brain damage, like Dr. Sears said, right?
Sure.
you know, I think the parents' attachment sets an example too. And I know we've talked about that before, right? And in fact, I think we talked about the fact that parents' relationships with other parents, like the parents' friendships, also sets an example for the kids and helps them to feel like they're part of a larger extended network. And, you know, if you've got that secure relationship, then the kids aren't going to be affected by you being away on a date with your significant other.
That's it. Now, they also have at number 8, the need to be right. Again, to me, this just falls into this category of you are turning inwards toward yourself and figuring out all the reasons why you're not going to make any effort to be in their shoes, turn towards them, empathize with them, and then by doing so, maybe get some empathy back for your point of view, which you're sticking to so strongly.
Mm-hmm. You know, I know that I'd rather be happy than right. I think for Giuseppe, it's the opposite, but I know it's important that you are right, and you have a hard time giving up those points. So.
Well, when you're right, you're right. That's the other thing.
They didn't say that in that article.
They didn't.
Oh my gosh, when you're right, you're right.
When you're right, you're right.
Wow. People who think they know it all really bother the people who do.
Now, lack of honesty about your past is number 9.
Wow, yes. Yeah. Don Draper has that problem.
Yes. And you see how his marriage went. Right?
We bring in the
that
pop
culture. That
happens
all the time, too. Hey, yes, people does. Taking yeah. other people's identities and...
Totally.
Hey,
well,
happens
I mean,
all the time.
Geez, you find dog tags lying around in Vietnam. What are you going to do?
Yep. Might as well
was
take it.
It wasn't Vietnam. Was it Vietnam? I don't
was
remember.
Was it Korea?
That.
It was Korea.
Was it Korea?
It was Korea, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought Vietnam was a little bit later.
Yes.
So.
So at number 10 is location, deciding where the two of you are going to live.
Okay.
Location, location, location.
That's what it says in the article. Location, location, location.
And that is a tension, especially because of all the transient nature of work and you know, and even you know, schooling. And
well, and access to the extended network, you know. The extended family, and if you're moving far away, I mean, they talked about living in a small studio apartment and things like that and how it's not conducive to being able to develop your own interests and to have a little bit of me time even within the relationship. And I think they also mentioned, and this is what occurred to me when I read this one, is that, you know, when one person has to move for their job and the other person follows because they're a couple, there can be some resentment there that builds up.
There can be. Now, that was just the, have you seen this movie, The 5-Year Engagement?
No, I haven't seen that one yet.
That is exactly the plot of the movie. I thought that's why you were bringing it up.
No, wow.
Yes, that's the plot of the movie.
I should be a writer. I was that close.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
If I would have said that 6 months ago, I could have said trademark. Me.
You could have.
I could have gotten the box office receipts for that.
Yes, and we wouldn't be here right now. We'd
too
be
late.
Jet-setting probably somewhere.
Probably, yeah.
I say we because I know, of course, you'd be giving me a lot of that money as I deserve it.
Yeah.
But that's exactly what happened. So she predicts he'll be resentful if he follows her to, I think it was Michigan from San Francisco, where they were.
Well, then that's understandable.
And he says, oh, of course I won't be resentful. And of course, he becomes resentful over time.
Mm-hmm.
Grows a very big beard. Ends up hunting deer.
Okay.
Instead of being a chef, which is what he was.
All right. Right. Welcome to Anatomy of Recent Movies at the box office.
Now, there's a British... So I also found a British survey. Now, this one's a pretty... this is a yearly survey.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that too. And they're surveying divorce lawyers. And I thought, okay, well, it's not from a scientific journal, but it's certainly a little more scientific than the statistics that we're getting from those folks in Vancouver, because they're looking at divorce lawyers who are surveying kind of their last year's cases and saying, okay, well, what were the most common reasons that couples cited for getting divorced? And the number one reason was, I like this one a lot.
Change in growing apart.
See that?
Yeah.
Connection.
That's it.
Attachment. It's connection. Are we talking about attachment again?
I think we are, but look at, if you look down this list, change in growing apart, extramarital affairs. To me, extramarital affairs is... you have been trying to connect to your spouse. You've given up and you've found an easier out.
Well, it's another one
else.
Where...
And so you're disconnecting from your spouse, mm-hmm. and you're connecting to someone else because you've become frustrated and unhappy.
Change and growing apart kind of fits in with those extramarital affairs, right?
Now,
that's the precursor usually.
I think so. And you know, the number three thing on there is unreasonable behavior.
I like that too.
I don't know what that one means.
They didn't really define it.
They didn't.
Unreasonable
behavior might be...
He plays darts every Thursday night.
You taking a drink from my water here. That could be unreasonable behavior.
This is in the UK though. So if I was taking a drink from your lager, I could understand. That is unreasonable.
That would be unreasonable. You're right. Maybe that's what they meant. Number four was midlife crisis. Now, this is interesting.
That's midlife funny because we talked about the midlife crisis, and the midlife crisis is a myth, right? But people are citing that as the reason for their...
Here's an interesting thing though. So they find that the number of years, like you get married, and there's these years where divorce is more common.
Right.
I think between...
5 and 7, I think?
Five or 6 and 7, something like that.
Yeah, the 7-year itch.
That's right, the 7-year itch. And then again at 10 and 12 years.
And that's more about the connection thing, right?
Yeah, that one is... feels like the first one is there's lots of conflict. Like the 5 to 7 year or 6 to 7 year one?
Well, you know, 5 years is a psychological milestone in a relationship, I think, right?
Right, but the early divorces, the ones that are like 5 to 7 years, are characterized more by intense conflict. So there, you get the sense that they're really fighting with one another and really trying to make it work, but they're really frustrated and there's lots of anxiety and lots of frustration.
Mm-hmm.
The 10 to 12 year cycle on this thing is more detached. There isn't the high conflict. There's this more just growing apart.
It's the mutual breakup.
We've done what we can do here,
yeah.
And it's not working. And I've given up. And the funny thing is that if you look at the 10 to 12, especially, and you add, like, when people usually get married, mid to late 20s.
Okay.
Early 30s, maybe.
Yeah, I think.
Add 10 to 12 years to
Italy,
that.
30 is the average. In the UK, it's 29.4.
Okay.
See how I pulled those stats out?
Very
Bam.
Good. Yeah, nice. So
I checked Italy, especially for my colleagues. See, we're growing closer together, not apart.
We are. Well, that's good. But if add 10 and 12 years to early 30s, late 20s, and you start to get into that
close
midlife
to your 40s,
crisis years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that's what's happening there, just... it's a statistical artifact in a way. It has nothing to do with the midlife crisis per se. It's not that the like there's men who dine to have a better nice car or a better just woman or something. It's
the
just
10-year itch happens
earlier
when people are around their late 30s, early 40s.
And
right?
it's this more like it's that seven, they say 7-year itch, right? Mm-hmm. The 10 to 12 year is more.
It's not an itch.
Futility yeah. and giving up. And so I feel like that's more connected to this midlife crisis rather than the stereotype that we've already talked about, which yeah. doesn't really exist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Number 5, emotional physical abuse. I mean, I'm surprised that this didn't show up on the earlier list in Canada, quite frankly. I mean, it might not be, well, for lawyers, it makes sense. I guess you always need a lawyer to get divorced, right?
Yeah, I
think so,
yeah. Is that
right? You can go through mediation, but you still need a lawyer.
Right.
Right?
I believe so.
If you think about these categories in these surveys of, you know, whether that people are getting closer together or giving up and going further apart.
Mm-hmm.
If there's emotional and physical and sexual abuse in a relationship, yeah. you're obviously going to be further and further driven away from your spouse.
Well, I mean, that's injury after injury, right? The more yeah. that happens to your relationship, not just physical injury, but injury yeah. to your relationship as well, right? It's hard to at the best of times, it's hard to overcome.
That's something that's that usually kind of a deal breaker.
Yeah.
Right. Number 6, workaholism. That's something that didn't show up on the Canadian list either.
Because Canadians are so laid back compared to those.
They don't work. It's don't work. No, but the workaholism, again, it's distancing yourself from your spouse.
So many of that's these things are about the bond and the connection,
that's
right?
That's it. Number 7 is stress, and number 8 is family strains. Both of them are like 2%.
Yeah, there's not a lot there. So what was number 1, I guess you could equate family strains with the extended family and the in-laws on the Canadian survey. That was number 1, and it's maybe 2% of the reason for divorces in the UK. But again, slightly more representative.
Representative.
Right, that's what it is. Yeah. I mean, you're surveying the top 100 divorce lawyers in the country.
They should have an idea.
Yeah, you would think that. You would think that.
There's a Turkish survey.
And this came out very different from the other ones, right? Well, I mean, cultural differences.
Well, in some ways,
right?
Yeah. Well, that's it. But see, you can look at it as you could go around the world and ask these questions. You can come up with very different answers superficially.
But they can mean the same thing.
They can mean the same thing. The number one thing that in Turkish society that they said led to divorce was irresponsible and pathetic behavior.
Pathetic behavior.
I put that in there. Yeah.
Oh,
it's
did
apathetic.
You? Oh, okay.
It's not. It could be pathetic.
You made
I suppose.
Me laugh. You got me on that one.
I get you.
Irresponsible, pathetic behavior. Who are they surveying in this? That's the number one reason.
Irresponsible and apathetic behavior. But
what was the weird behavior on the UK survey? I don't have it written down on my thing, but it's a similar
it was
kind
number,
of a situation.
It was number unreasonable.
Unreasonable behavior.
Yes.
Yes, that might be pathetic too.
It could be.
That's
but this
not reasonable
irresponsible
at all.
To me, irresponsible and apathetic means disengaged. That's what it means. Disengaged
mm-hmm.
behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Not turning towards your spouse with any kind of love or affection or empathy or
spending
care.
Your money without consulting with them first and doing all kinds of things without talking to them about it.
That's number 4, financial.
Financial
thing.
That's
in
number
there.
4, okay.
Financial, alcohol abuse, and gambling are all clustered in number 4.
Yeah.
All of those, alcohol abuse and gambling are addictions. When you have an addiction, you're married to your addiction, you're not married to your spouse anymore.
It comes between you, yeah.
Yeah. Number 3 was extramarital affairs. Number 2 was maltreatment and beating.
Wow.
But the
that's number 2.
That was number 2. The interesting thing, though, was that when you look at this article, what they highlight is that 20% of Turkish women do not consider violence and beating as good reasons for divorce. 20%.
Yeah, there's cultural differences.
Seems rather
there for sure.
high there.
Yeah. 1 in 5 saying
one
it's okay.
Five saying
it's okay if he beats
now,
me up.
Probably they're not the same women that have experienced that. And it might be just them reiterating something from the culture. Mm. Japanese survey.
Okay. Will this be different? Let's find out.
Number one was infidelity.
Let's stick with the top five on this one. We're going through.
But this one, you're going to find this one interesting, though.
Okay.
Number two, alcoholism. We already talked about that. Number three, spending too much money. Number four and number six are spending too much time on computer games. Number four.
Mm-hmm.
And number six, spending too much time surfing the net.
Oh, wow. Okay, that is interesting.
There you know, this is like you could come up with endless numbers of things on these surveys. Depends what you decide to put on the survey as a question, for one thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not like they're soliciting.
It does depend on where you ask. Because, I mean, I think South Korea, for example, they have to have laws against the amount of time you can spend playing certain computer games because people go without eating.
Listen, it depends on where you ask because Italy didn't have divorce until 1970s.
Right.
Ireland,
you checked Ireland.
1995.
I saw that in your notes. I said, good man.
Did that for you.
And I had a problem there with the Irish and the Scottish stuff because it's all lumped in with the UK and the Brits kind of skew everything.
Yes, they do. Well, especially in the case of Ireland, because you couldn't get divorced until 1995.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing was that I guess it was Malta that you couldn't get divorced till 2011, just last year.
Wow.
You could not get divorced until last year.
And Malta, now their divorce rate is 110%.
That's right. It's a huge backlog there. And then The Philippines, you still can't get a divorce. Like, you cannot get divorced in the Philippines. So, their divorce rate is very low.
Zero.
Extremely low.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking that, you remember Imelda Marcos? She was the wife of the dictator there.
Yeah.
Ferdinand Marcos.
Yes.
She had all these shoes.
She had that. She was famous for the shoes.
She was sinking all of her angst of being married to a dictator into those shoes.
Mm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was tough.
She was distracting herself with shopping.
So the statistics are somewhat skewed that way in that there's different laws, there's different access to divorce, there's different barriers to it, and some places it's easier, and some places, well, you can't get it all.
So what's the highest? What country has the highest divorce rate?
The U.S.
Yep. Where's Canada on that
list?
They're
on top of the list of everything, so why not divorce
USA,
too?
USA.
Canada's eighth on the list.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
And we got Russia, UK, Denmark, New Zealand, Australia just before Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the graph there's 34 countries.
Yeah. I know what you're going to say, dude. Just spit it out.
Italy,
man.
Italy's is the third lowest on that list.
Really?
But again, it does have to do with Ireland's not even on the list.
Well, it's lumped in with the UK.
Oh, I see. That's why.
Well, okay, Northern Ireland also, at least would be lumped
okay, but
in
there's them. Also the fact that, you know, they don't know how to do divorce. You know, they've only been doing it for a couple of decades.
That's right. So what's going on with Italy then? They're too Catholic.
Yes. Well, you can't get, I think I remember seeing something about the Vatican, but I don't recall exactly.
Well, I pulled out a little statistic for you because I saw that it seemed like, because Giuseppe was kind enough to send me his notes before we started today, so I could kind of verify his statistics. I was his fact checker.
Yes.
So he sent me his notes a little early and I saw, oh, wow, Italy is 33rd on a list of 36 countries or something in terms of divorce rates. And it seemed like in his notes, the way that was highlighted, that he was quite proud of that fact. And so I did another little check and I have another statistic for you. Out of 26 countries, Italy was 24th. In marriage rates. So there are fewer divorces in Italy, but they're not getting married, dude.
They're not getting married so much.
They are not getting married so much.
The interesting thing is, I did read some more on Italy, of course.
Of course you did. So what else would I expect you to do?
One of the things that they were saying is when there is a divorce, the negative effects on the kids are minimized because they tend to have that larger extended family around them. So there is that attachment community
mm-hmm.
around them much more than there is in some other parts of the world.
Yeah.
And here's an example. Over 50% of married couples, when they get married,
right,
will live in Italy, will live within a kilometer of one of their parents.
Wow.
A lot, now they say within a kilometer. You know, a lot of what you see is
they might be in the same home.
They're going to be in the same structure. Yeah. There's a three-story, mm-hmm. and the grandparents are going to be on the first floor, and the you know their parents will be on the second floor, and they'll be on the third floor.
Wow.
A little bit of respect there for who can get up and downstairs too, I guess.
I guess so. I get those reporters from Vancouver should have gone to visit Italy to talk about extended families interfering in couples' relationships, right?
That's right. So we've been talking about a lot of these surveys, and again, you can put you can make answers appear on surveys based on the kinds of questions you're asking. And
well, yeah, statistics can tell you anything you want them to.
Statistics can lie, yeah. So, but not that they're not valid. It's just that a lot of them are more superficial. Not all of them. Some of them, you know, like alcoholism and abuse are very real, and I don't think you can say that they're superficial in any way.
But pathetic behavior.
Behavior might be, for instance, but or even like spending a lot of time on the computer. It's not that in and of itself. That's the surface of it. Obviously, there's something underlying that.
It's a symptom of something that's going on, like I said earlier.
So there's researchers, and I guess one of the most prominent ones is Dr. John Gottman and his wife, Julia.
Mm-hmm.
Who, you know, they've been doing this research for 35 years.
Yes, they have. Well, I remember studying him when we were doing family therapy, was studying his work and the idea that the ways couples fight, it's not the fighting that's the bad thing, it's the way you fight that causes problems.
And I guess a lot of the research that he did for a portion of that time, at least, was in trying to predict which couples, after they got married, would get divorced. And he had models, and he would have a prediction rate in the 90s.
Right. And stuff like that. And Markman kind of built on, do you remember Markman, Fighting for Your Marriage? He was the book that he wrote, and there have been a series of books based on that.
Yeah.
Fighting for Your Christian Marriage, Fighting for Your African-American Marriage.
Okay.
And he was kind of taking that idea of these are the predictors and the way you fight and things like that. It's been years and years since I read that book, but
yeah,
that was certainly the one that was the follow-up after I was looking at Markman's stuff. I know I was recommending that one to parents ages and ages ago.
Yeah, so I guess the book that Gottman ended up writing was Seven Principles of Making Marriage Work.
Mm-hmm.
It might be something we can talk about in another show.
We could have a whole Seven Principles show.
We could, and you know, the findings of his research in terms of what can predict that a marriage is going to break up.
Right. So this is the real information. This is 35 years of research showing that with 90% accuracy, when these things are happening, you can predict that there's a big problem. So they need to be changed ASAP.
Right. So he's got four negative behaviors that are most predictive of divorce.
Yeah.
Number one, criticism of the partner's personality or your partner's personality.
Yeah.
Number two, contempt for your partner.
We talked about contempt before, right? And how dangerous that poisons your relationship when that stuff
really
comes in.
And it tells you something about how far along your relationship has come when there's that contempt in it.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, defensiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And number four, emotional withdrawal from the interaction.
Right, and that pursuit withdrawal pattern that Sue Johnson talked about.
That's it. And, you know, when you look at this list, you can even pare it down further to being withdrawn and being sort of
contemptuous
in your own world and sure of what your position is and not making any kind of turn towards your partner to understand them, to get into their shoes, to empathize with them. And again, to have that work for you, because your partner might be in the same spot as well in terms of being solidified in their point of view. And you need that back and forth. You need to take some risks and try relating to them again. And the opposite is what you're seeing here, criticizing them because, of course, you're 100% right, contempt for them and their position, and then defending yourself because, again, you are definitely right and there's no reason to look into your partner's experience and see what their point of view is.
And you can see that in couples who enter into conflict. That's where these kinds of things come out with name-calling often, right? The name-calling is, I mean, that's the demonstration of that contempt is when you're calling your partner names.
And I guess he had a couple of positive behaviors that he listed there too. The first one being handling conflicts in a gentle, positive way, and the second being supportive of one another.
And the third, co-hosting a podcast together.
Which worked up until recently. Like I say, the papers are in the mail.
Yes.
But, you know, when you look at these two that are more positive behaviors...
Mm-hmm. It's not fighting that's the bad thing. It's what you do when you engage in conflict. So it's the gentle conflict, but then you're still taking your part. If you're being gentle in a disagreement, well, then it's not a conflict so much. It's a disagreement, right?
It's a disagreement, and there's a softness. You know, it's that what Neufeld talks about as well. There's a certain softness to it.
Seems to me ages ago, I read a study that talked about humor, even in conflict kind of situations, and how, you know, as long as it's not denigrating your partner, you're not making really mean comments about them as a joke, but, you know, some gentle humor can really... It's a positive thing.
Some of the positive communication things that they talk about, mm-hmm. what's involved in that, being more agreeable, laughing, using humor, smiling, being gentle with touch and so on.
Well, caring about one another, even when you're disagreeing, right? That's what it is, basically.
Yeah, that's right.
You're caring about the other person's feelings.
That's right. So that's what the research was showing him. The other thing we were talking about earlier, if you're younger, you have a greater chance of divorcing. If your parents were divorced, you have a much greater chance of getting divorced yourself as well. So those are also risk factors.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause you have a different idea, I guess, or a different, I know in Catholic families, right? When parents divorce, it makes it sound like, oh, it's acceptable. Whereas, mm-hmm. you know, under the religious views, it wouldn't be at all.
That's right. So then there's this, there's a 2012 study that I found in the Journal of Family Psychology. Why do even satisfied newlyweds eventually go on to divorce? Mm-hmm. So they get these 136 couples, and they rate themselves as happy within the first 4 years, or satisfied, I guess, with their relationship.
Sure. Right?
And then they track them to see what's the difference between those ones that they're all starting out happy.
Mm-hmm.
How do we distinguish between the ones that end up divorced and the ones that don't?
Right.
Over the next 10 years.
I love those perspective studies.
And so... what they found is that there were two things. One, again, similar to what we just said, the negative communication it was the one thing. Expressing inappropriate pessimism, discouraging expressions of feelings, insisting that the partner resolves thing on their own. It's like, again, turning away from your partner.
On their own, yeah.
Right? And the second thing was anger and contempt. And, you know, the interesting thing that they found was that some of the husbands in particular that, like, they all started out with a certain level of satisfaction.
Sure.
Right? They,
well, that's
just
how
married.
They got in the study in the beginning.
Right. But they're, you know, they're just married too.
Newlyweds.
The husbands that had the highest levels of rating themselves as satisfied were also the ones that were more likely to have angry communication patterns.
Angry communication patterns at the time or later on?
At the time. So the interesting thing is that, you know, they were so happy that they didn't appreciate how corrosive that kind of behavior can be, and that over time, that slowly...
It erodes the relationship.
Eroded the relationship from that high level, higher than the husbands that were still married at the end of the 10 years.
Right.
So there's something to be said about being cognizant of, you know, we can take this because our relationship is so satisfactory. Well, maybe not. Maybe that's something that you have to be very wary of.
And that angry communication isn't always, you know, they might not even be aware that those are the messages that they're sending out. So often in families, you have to be thinking about, you know, if I'm seeing families in the office, often I'm encouraging them to think about the inadvertent messages that they're sending with their behavior, right? Because you're not always aware of the body language or of, you know, sometimes making a comment that you mean as a joke, but that might not be interpreted that way. That happens in every family. And so in these ones where the husbands are happy, you know, maybe they're not thinking that these negative comments that they're making. Like you said, they're not realizing how corrosive those can be. You do need to be alert to how your messages might be interpreted on the other end.
And that's the whole thing about that, again, is turning towards your partner so that you're actually putting yourself in their shoes.
A little bit of empathy.
A little bit of empathy will give you that awareness that you might be lacking.
Yeah.
I think we've come to the end of our show.
Does that bring us to our top three things? Let's do it.
And the number one thing to remember is that there are long lists of things that could be considered marriage killers, as we've talked about. But these lists can be superficial and can often be boiled down to turning towards your partner in a loving and caring way versus turning away in fear, distraction, and avoidance.
That's right. Now, some reasons for divorce are much more serious and require some professional intervention or help, such as spousal abuse is definitely one of them, or addictions. Partners shouldn't be shy about looking for that extra help outside the relationship, whether it's from a medical doctor or a therapist or another professional.
That's right. And the number three thing to remember is make empathy a priority in your relationship. This will come back to you and help keep your relationship strong.
Indeed it will. And that brings us to the end.
You can visit us at familyanatomy.com or email us at info@familyanatomy.com.
You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. And as usual, we'll leave you with a bit of a tune by Brother Love. And he's over at brotherloverocks.com.
Thanks for listening.
See you in 2 weeks. So get up and sing. It's a family thing. Hey! You know what to do. FamilyAnatomy.com